This special Ain't Slayed Nobody campaign contains adult language and violent themes, including children in peril. Listener discretion is advised. Today's episode isn't our regular Old West campaign, Y'all of Cthulhu. Instead, we hope you'll join us for part one of three from a mini-campaign that Scott Dorward graciously agreed to run for us. We're playing the game Cthulhu Dark by Graham Walmsley, and this scenario is called Fairyland, and it was written by our game master, Scott Dorward. Our theme song is Last Goodbye, featuring Danica Dora by Eric Kinney. Our cast includes Alex McDaniel, Will Baser, Chuck, and I am Cuppy Cup. If you're joining us for the first time, please try our monthly campaign in the Wild West. The next episode will be available on July 14th. And if you already listen, go buy a t-shirt at slade.me/merch. If you don't know, Scott Dorward is a freelance writer and editor specializing in tabletop role-playing games. He has worked on Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition, Masks of Nyarlathotep 5th Edition, The Two-Headed Serpent for Pulp Cthulhu, the World War Cthulhu line, and many other games. Along with Matt Sanderson and Paul Fricker, Scott co-hosts the Good Friends of Jackson Elias podcast, where they discuss Call of Cthulhu, horror films, weird fiction, and other things that inform their gaming lives. That is my personal favorite podcast in this space. Scott is also a regular cast member on the How We Roll Actual Play podcast, which is my second favorite podcast in this space. And now Scott is going to tell us how to play Cthulhu Dark, which is different than Call of Cthulhu. If you already know how to play Cthulhu Dark, or you're not interested in the rules, skip to the 10-minute mark of this podcast. And now I'll turn it over to you, Scott.
Yeah, I'll explain then quickly how the rules work. You have a single stat. In the version of Cthulhu Dark I shared with you earlier, the original version, the stat is called Insanity. But in the new edition that's come out recently, it's actually called Insight. And it reflects how in tune with the world of the Cthulhu mythos you've become. How much you can draw upon, how much you have come to understand the horrible cosmic truths that underpin our reality. And learning more about that is generally not a good thing. It will not end well for you. Your insight, like I say, starts off as one, and then it will almost certainly progress during the course of the game. If it ever reaches six, then it's like hitting zero sanity in Call of Cthulhu. Your character has this moment of just breaking, and then they become a non-player character, usually doing bad things to everyone else. The way insight goes up is through what are referred to appropriately as insight rolls. So anytime I ask for an insight roll, and I'll give you some examples in a moment of when I might, you basically just roll a d6 and you compare it against your current insight. If the value is higher than your current insight, then it goes up by one. If it's equal to or under, it stays the same. The only special rule about insight is if your insight ever hits five, so you're right there teetering on the edge, you can attempt to recover some insight.
To talk yourself down?
Sort of. Well, it's not that. It's more a question of destroying the evidence. So it's finding the things that have brought you this unwholesome insight, documents, artifacts, pieces of evidence, all the useful things that everyone else is probably clinging on to, and destroying them. And if you do that, you get to make another insight roll, and if your insight is lower than your current insight, it goes down by one.
I like it.
Yes. As far as the game mechanics go, they are blindingly simple. So most of the time, if you're trying to do something, you just succeed. If it's investigative or if it's something that might have a degree of success attached to it. So, that could be poking around in someone's house trying to find something. That could be questioning someone who has done something suspect. It could be trying to run away from a hideous monster. But something that has got a bit of uncertainty associated. You roll a single d6. By default, you automatically succeed. What you're rolling for is the degree of success. So a 1 is a bare minimum. If you are, say, questioning a suspect, you roll a d6. If you roll a 1, you'll learn just the bare necessity of what you need to progress. If you roll a bit better, you'll learn a bit more. If you roll 5, you will learn absolutely everything useful there is to know about it. But if you roll 6, you perhaps learn a little more than you really wanted to. You start getting insights into things that perhaps your worldview was happier not including. And this may in turn end up triggering an insight roll. There are occasions when you can roll more than one die. For example, if you are doing something that relates to your profession, so let's say your profession is doctor, and you are performing a medical examination on someone, or an autopsy. Yeah, an autopsy, that's a good example. Trying to work out how someone died. Ordinarily, anyone else would roll a single d6. But because you're a doctor, you get to roll 2d6, an additional one for your profession. And you take the higher of the two results. At any time as well, you can choose to improve your odds by rolling an extra die for your insight. And this is quite a powerful thing because it not only gives you that additional chance, but you can also use it to get rerolls. So let's say you were poking around some hideous stone ruin trying to figure out what monstrous race created it and reading some strange inscriptions on it. You rolled to try to understand what these inscriptions meant and you rolled a 1. And that's a bit crap, really. I mean, you've learned perhaps a little bit, but you really wanted to learn more than that. So you could push for a reroll. And you do that by rolling again, but rolling an additional die as well, separately for your insight. If that comes up high, then you have to make an insight roll after that, so it could drive you into insanity. You can also choose just to include that insight die anytime you want, because damn it, you want more dice. It's not a good idea, but it's an option. If you're trying to do something that a human being ordinarily wouldn't be able to do, speak an alien language, cast a spell, you know, find some way of disrupting this weird alien artifact, you can attempt to do that, but you attempt to do it by just rolling your insight die. You cannot roll any other dice. So your insight die will automatically come up high. You will automatically have to make an insight roll afterwards. So it's useful, but it's really dangerous.
I'm mostly interested in the one where you can try and force someone else to fail.
Yes, I was just coming to that. Yeah, as I said, when you roll a die, you automatically succeed. But sometimes someone at the table, it's usually going to be me, but it could be any of you, might think,
Chuck, I swear to God.
Yeah. You can roll against them. And this is not your character taking direct action. This is just the fickle finger of fate, you know, prodding them where it hurts. You roll, they roll. If your die beats their roll, they fail. Of course, they can get a reroll using that inside die and push themselves headlong into madness. It's all good. And similarly, there may be times where characters are actually in direct conflict with each other. I mean, usually this is a fight of some description, but it can be, say, one person hiding from another, a battle of wits, that kind of thing. If that's the case, you both roll dice. Whoever gets the higher result wins. If it's a draw, then you just re-roll. And it's that simple. There are no hit points, so you generally just decide on what the stake is. So say you decide that you want to smack old McDonald over the head with a spade, because he's asking for it, then you can have that opposed roll between you and just decide that he's stunned or knocked out for the time being, and that's that. And sooner or later, he'll just come back into play with a big lump on his head and a really, really bad headache.
Is there a way to die in this?
Yes. Yeah, because the other really, really, really important combat mechanic in this, which is completely different than Call of Cthulhu, is the one key rule, which is if you attempt to fight a monster, you die.
Duly noted. That sort of dovetails nicely with how I play the other Call of Cthulhu, where I just never fight.
And I think that is pretty much it.
Thank you, Scott, for the most interesting rules summary I've ever heard. We're really happy to have you joining us for this game. And without further ado, Ain't Slayed Nobody proudly presents Fairyland by Scott Dorward.
Shadows in the sky, footsteps in the night, behind me, targets in their sight, running out of light to save me. You say your last good night while I keep getting by.
The setup is you are a family, it sounds like, who's moved back from America to this small village in the Scottish borders called Cullingston. You've bought a house there, this converted farmhouse, or perhaps even working farmhouse called Linty Farm, just on the edge of the village. Yeah, we'll start off with you moving in there.
My name is Chuck, and I will be playing Zeke Mulesworth. Back in America, I was a patent medicine salesman, also known as a snake oil salesman. I had a patent medicine that was mostly opium and alcohol and some spices. That's what I did for a living, was sell it. I was not good at that, but so now I have decided to become a farmer. I like to say so that I can walk the straight and narrow path, but the fact is I wasn't very good at selling my patent medicine, so it's time to try something else.
And how about Mary?
I'm Alex McDaniel, and I'll be playing Mary Mulesworth. I am a school teacher. I taught in America for a number of years. I heard that a teacher at the school here in Cullingston is in need of some help. I am 5'5" with brown hair, and I'm rather proper. I'm married to Zeke, and we have a daughter named Maggie.
Oh, yeah, we have a daughter named Maggie.
So, I
seem to keep forgetting these things.
So tell me about Maggie.
Yes, honey. Tell them about Maggie.
Well, she's 8 years old. We've pinned that bit down, but what she'd like as a person.
Maggie is a bit of a tomboy. She's precocious.
Precocious. I like that.
She is an old soul.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Maggie's thin and pretty tall for her age. She has blonde hair and blue eyes.
Which is crazy, because neither of us have that.
But the milkman does.
But the milkman, back in whatever town we came from.
Messia,
right. So there's a source of tension in our marriage.
All right, my name is Old McDonald. Ollie McDonald. I am originally from the United States, but my father, he wanted me to come along with him to the wherever the hell we are now.
You mean Cullingston, lad?
Yeah, whatever. I really wanted to escape the United States because I didn't want to join the Cuban War.
Oh, nice. Yep.
Here I am now. I guess I'm getting into farming. Which is not really what I did back home. When I did back home, just the odd jobs, but I guess I'll get into farming now. You know, I have some cows, I have some goats. I do know how they talk.
I'm sorry?
Because I have a farm.
Oh, brother.
They used to burn people at the stake for that.
Still might.
I'm a thin guy with ragged, dirty blonde hair, makings of a beard, but not a really good beard. So, kind of like what I look like in real life, but blonde hair.
All right. I am Cuppy Cup, and I'm playing Bill McDonald. I was born in Scotland, left as a boy. Accent's a bit rubbish now, living in America. I'm trained in medicine, work as a doctor and a barber in a town called Messia. Oh, how I've dearly missed the hills and the woods of Scotland. Ole and Mary are my children. You can see I'm a bit stocky with a nice head of grey hair. I wear wireframe spectacles, and I need a nap.
Well, I think one of the things that's possibly brought you to Cullingston in particular is that the village doctor, Dr. Boswell, has retired from his practice, and the village is now without a doctor. I mean, for a village of this size, they don't necessarily need a doctor, and they could go to Galashiels, which is just a few miles down the road, but which is, you know, as close to the big city as you get round here. I mean, it must have almost 1,000 people there. But here in Cullingston, I mean, there is a small doctor's surgery. You've corresponded with Dr. Boswell. He has actually retired at this stage. The surgery has been closed for a little bit, but he has basically entered a financial arrangement with you whereby you will take it on.
That is exactly what I was going to say next.
Fantastic. So, it is late spring 1897, and you have made the trek across from the United States by boat, and you've probably come in somewhere like Glasgow and taken the train across to Galashiels and arranged for some kind of transport, you know, probably horse-drawn carts, to take you and your possessions across to your new family home, Linty Farm, just on the outskirts of Cullingston. And as you pass through the area, I mean, it is really quite beautiful. I mean, it's not the best day. I mean, it's slightly overcast, there's a little bit of drizzle in the air, but still it's clear enough that you can see that, yeah, there are green rolling fields all around. There seems to be a lot of sheep farming in the area in particular. There are a few hills in the area. I mean, they're not big hills by any means, but yeah, gentle rolling hills. And as you enter through the village itself, you pass by a big patch of woodland. This is pine woodland, huge old Scotch pines. And from the look of it, those of you who are used to working on the land can see that this is ancient woodland. And by the time you get to the end of the woods, the cart drivers turn off and you're in the driveway, or you're in the path, rather, leading to this grey stone country house. If it was a farmhouse, it was probably a fairly nice one, a fairly large one. You can see that there are a few outbuildings around. I mean, this is a two-story house. There are large green fields that roll on from here. Off in the distance, there is a wooden fence that's just on the far side of a river that runs through. And the property pretty much borders onto this woodland. And with that, the men with, grunts sort of start helping you get your various boxes and chests and so on off the wagons.
I guess I could help with that. Okay, I got some. I'll help out with some boxes, bring them into this place, take a look around, grab my room.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there are 5 bedrooms to choose from. I mean, this is a decent-sized house. And, Maggie is off like a shot and just exploring as soon as... Yeah, everyone is off the wagons.
Mary, would you mind, Maggie? I'm gonna help Ole with the bags.
Maggie, slow down. Stay close to the house now.
Yeah, Maggie at this stage has sort of run off right down to the far end of the fields, down near where the river is. And before you can get anywhere near her, she's there just plucking up bits of grass and throwing them onto the water and watching them float off.
So what's the inside of this place look like? Is this a nice place, or, I mean, is this kind of a dump at this point?
It's somewhere in between. I mean, this is a big, well-made, solid building. But on the other hand, you know, it's not what you're used to from the US. I mean, this is, like I say, it's a stone building. It feels kind of cool inside, even on a spring day like this. There's a slight musty smell in there, a smell of mildew and, you know, perhaps that very piquant smell of mouse piss. That, yeah, there are certainly mouse droppings everywhere. I mean, this place hasn't been lived in for a while.
Do you smell that, boys? This place is fit for a king, is it not?
It's a bit,
Yeah, old man.
Dank for my taste.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna go to the kitchen and check that one out.
I believe I'll go check upstairs and make sure that Mary and I get the room appropriate to us.
And I will take the largest and most well-appointed room.
You did say it was two stories, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't just make up an upstairs.
No, there are four bedrooms upstairs, and then round the back there's another bedroom on a, you know, sort of an annex that looks like it might have been built even as servants' quarters. But it's still a perfectly serviceable bedroom, just perhaps a bit colder than the rest of the house.
Bill's a little concerned with his advanced age about taking a room on the second floor, going up and down the stairs all the time, so he's going to check out the downstairs.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a big room by any means. It's a bit drafty, but yeah, it's perfectly serviceable. Yeah, I'm sure you can make it cozy. There's a little fireplace in there.
I'll have this haunted room on the first floor, thank you.
I'll grab a room on the, I guess, western corner.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the room there, I mean, it's not the largest room by any means, but I mean, compared to American houses, this, you know, the rooms are all a bit smaller than you had back at home, and yeah, it perhaps feels a little more claustrophobic.
All right, is there another room?
Zeke finds this all terribly disappointing.
Stop your complaining, lad. Look at this view of the woods. You can't find this in Messiah.
Yeah, the view of the woods, you can see it from your bedroom window quite nicely. The view of the woods is magnificent. I mean, you know, some of these trees are huge. I mean, they stretch up, some of them the best part of 100 feet tall. And this is, as I said, ancient woodland. Now, cutting back briefly outside, Mary was chasing after Maggie, just trying to keep up with her. But Maggie at this stage is like an excitable puppy. There's, you know, so many new scents and you know, things around here that, you know, by the time you catch up with her, she's running off somewhere else, you know, poking around at some wildflowers and, you know, running you dizzy.
Maggie, don't run away from me. Come pick your room.
Zeke is heading downstairs trying to figure out where they ran off to.
So as Mary is chasing after Maggie, you can hear the clop, clop, clop of horse hooves coming up the path and the crunch of gravel as it's coming nearer the house. And you can see that there is a man riding in. He's really quite an old-looking man. He's bald, he's got wispy white hair, you know, what's left of it, and a little crown round his head. He's liver-spotted and wrinkled. He's wearing a very nice tweed suit. And he's, you know, riding this dappled horse, perhaps a little bit gingerly. And he waves at you from, you know, up by the house as he sees you running past chasing Maggie.
I'll just wave back nicely but dismissively.
He gives you an exasperated look, perhaps a look of some impatience as he's there sitting on his horse. And he sweeps his hand down at, you know, down at his horse as if he expects you to understand what this means.
Do I understand what that means?
Not really.
Mary gives him the finger.
That would be in keeping with the way we normally play these games.
Yeah, but you could shout across the garden to him if you want.
Yeah, please holler.
Please holler.
Fine, I'll holler. Hello?
He shouts back, hello, miss. Can you help me down from my horse?
Certainly, but let's make this quick.
Are you just leaving Maggie out there to run off into the woods?
Let's assume Maggie is contained.
Yeah, yeah, just tell yourself that. And yeah, as you run over, he's looking, you know, quite grumpy and impatient. And yeah, are you going to help me down, lassie?
What would you like me to do?
Just take my hand.
Easy now. Come on down, slowly.
He looks like he's probably in his 80s. And, you know, as you help him down, he's swaying as he's getting out of the saddle. And, you know, finally manages to ease himself down onto the ground. And, yeah, I mean, with that, you know, just a flicker of a smile crosses his face. And he said, tell me, lassie, is your husband home or your father?
Yes, let me call for them.
Actually, Zeke is walking out the door right now because he's trying to figure out where Mary and Maggie are.
You see this old man talking to Mary, and he looks over at you and says, you're not Dr. McDonald, are you?
No, friend, I'm afraid I'm not Dr. McDonald, though I do have a bit of medical experience, if you will. How can I help you?
Ah, he says, I'm Dr. Boswell. I wanted to see, is it your father?
Mary, I believe he's inquiring about your father. Would you go and fetch him?
Sure, but you'll need to chase down Maggie.
Where is Maggie?
Yeah, where is Maggie?
Maggie! Maggie, get up here, girl.
Yeah, you shout for Maggie, and yeah, there's no sign of her.
There's no sign of her? Oh.
No.
Maggie!
Mary, where is Maggie run off to?
She was just right there, and this man rode up and needed help. She was right there, I swear, I have no idea.
Go and get your family, I'll go find her. Excuse me, sir, I'm afraid I have to go locate my daughter, but Dr. McDonald will be down soon enough, if you'll excuse me. And I take off a bit angrily towards the woods.
Just as you're heading off, the man places, you know, this wizened old hand on the back of your arm and says, your daughter, how old is she?
She's 8 just this summer.
Ah.
Right? 8? Was she 8? That sounds right. I think she was 8. Mary, how old is Maggie again?
I'm going inside the house. You figure it out.
And when you reply, when Dr. Boswell, you know, shakes his head, good, good, good.
Good?
It's a good age, isn't it? It's a good age for a girl.
Yes, well, she's a handful, but we do love her.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm sorry. She does have a bit of wanderlust to her. I gotta make sure she doesn't run off too far, or we'll never get her back for supper.
Yes, of course. And he looks quite distracted at this stage. You know, he's walking over towards the house.
And I take off, not too quickly, but sort of storm off angrily, like, where is that girl?
Okay, we'll come back to you in a moment. So meanwhile, Mary was heading inside looking for her father.
Dad, are you in here?
Mary, tell me you love the house. It's a wonderful bit. And the woods.
It's fine, I suppose. But there's an old man outside and he's asking for you. He doesn't look very well.
I'm my first patient. And Bill follows Mary outside with some pep in his step to greet this man.
Yeah, so you see this, as I said, this kind of balding, liver-spotted, wizened old gnome of a man standing hunched outside. You know, he looks up at you with roomy eyes. And, you must be Dr. McDonald?
Bill looks the man up and down a little bit. Tank Evans, you didn't wait to see me in the office? I'm the doctor at your service.
Ah, he stretches out a trembling hand and says, Dr. Boswell, I thought I had better make myself known to you and give you these, he says, patting round all his pockets. And, you know, he reaches in and pulls out a paper-wrapped bag of sweets and a pocket watch and a little notebook, and eventually comes up with a bunch of keys and hands them over to you. You know, they jingle in his shaking hand as he passes them over. These are the keys to the surgery. You'll find it in the village. It's the one with the sign outside that says surgery.
I appreciate you riding out here straight away. What kind of cases might I expect at the office?
It's usually quiet. Well, this is farming country, so there are sometimes farming accidents, and I suppose I have had to perform my fair share of amputations. But, yes, apart from that, it's the usual, you know, sickness and childhood illnesses, and, yes, writing the occasional death certificate, you know, the usual.
Did you leave the pertinent documents and patient histories behind for me?
Yes, I've left all my files there. If you have any questions about any of the patients, my cottage is... He tries to give you directions, you know, and it sounds like it's on the other side of the village. But when he repeats back the directions to you, they sound slightly different. there's this glassy, vacant look in his eyes.
Can Bill do a visual examination of Dr. Boswell just to see if there's anything obviously wrong with him?
Yes. You know, give me a roll on 2d6 then, as you are a doctor.
I rolled a 3 on the first die, I guess the regular die, and a 6 on the occupation die.
Okay. You don't reckon that there's anything particularly physically wrong with him. I mean, the main source of his feebleness and absent-mindedness seems to be the fact that he's just really fucking old. you reckon he's probably in his mid-80s. I mean, he's in good condition for a man of his age, but he is old.
In this day and age, he might as well be 200 years old.
Yes. But they're made of hardy stock around here. But, yeah, on that 6, you get the impression that there's something else, not a physical malady, but there is a slightly haunted look to his eyes. There's, you know, perhaps around the eyes, it's even more heavily lined than you might expect from a man of his age. Yeah, the expression in his eyes. I mean, they're roomy, they're vague, but at the same time, they're perhaps slightly frightened.
Are there any specific cases I should know about before I head to the office?
No. It's all very straightforward. I'm sure for an experienced doctor like yourself, it will be perhaps even a little dull.
Very well. And Bill accepts the keys and the sweets from Boswell.
Wait, were the sweets for him or?
He wasn't making a show of handing them, but I mean, if McDonald takes them out of his hand, then he's got to be too polite to take them back.
Americans.
Those Werther's originals are Bill's now.
Oh.
And Dr. McDonald pats him on the back in kind of an investigative way as he thanks him for the sweets and sends him off.
An investigative pat on the back. Can you describe to me what that looks like?
He's assessing his bone curvature.
You're squeezing and rubbing.
Yes, gently. We're all doctors here.
Yes, yeah, you don't notice anything, you know, unusually bulbous or prehensile or, you know, any wings growing out of his back or anything like that.
You don't find a wings or a tail.
Okay, I was trying to stretch that 6 roll, but I'm satisfied now.
But he does ask you to help him back on his horse.
Allow me to give you a hand here. And with just one hand, Bill shoves him up toward the saddle.
Oh, yes. I mean, he's so light that you almost push him over the other side. But with that, he gives you a cheery wave, or at least as cheery a wave as Umberos or Bug Luck him is capable of, and, you know, turns the horse around and trots away.
And Bill holds up the keys and yells, "What do all these keys go to?"
You work it out. And yes, he trots away. Now, let's go back to Zeke.
Let's.
Zeke is dead.
The camera cuts back to Zeke and he's just lying on the ground.
Yes. Tell me about your new character. So Zeke was heading into the woods. I don't know how much experience you've got of wandering around really old pine woods, but they are quite eerie places. Old ones like this, where the pine trees are growing close together and there is huge pine cover, once you're more than about 10 yards inside them, and it's not quite pitch black, but it's certainly dark. You can barely tell that you're in daylight. It's just providing such a solid canopy overhead. And it's also eerily quiet in here. You can barely even hear your own movement. I mean, it's all cushioned by this carpet of dead pine needles that's lying between the trees. There's no bird song, there's no sound of animals, there's nothing. There's not even wind blowing through. It's just deadly quiet.
Zeke is taking a look around. He is noting that it is a bit eerie, but he is primarily concerned with two things, and that is finding Maggie, and also he reaches inside his jacket pocket where he keeps a small bottle of Dr. Zeke's curious concoction, and he takes a little swig of it. Again, mostly alcohol and opium.
Surely there's some cocaine in there as well, just to offset the opium. I mean, just for medical reasons.
He likes the flavor, really. And then he calls out, "Maggie! Maggie! Come on, girl, we're gonna need to get some food! Maggie!"
As you shout from somewhere within the woods, I mean, your voice doesn't echo quite as much as you think it should do. But again, you know, there's the deadening effect of the trees and the pine needles overhead and the pine needles underfoot. But somewhere off in the distance, you hear a distant...
That's not disconcerting at all. Not at all.
No, not at all. Can I tell if that sounds like Maggie?
Yeah, give me a d6 roll.
That's a 1.
I mean, it's definitely a little girl's laugh. You're not sure if you've heard Maggie laugh quite like that before, but it could be hers. It's difficult to tell with these acoustics.
Zeke is largely absent and doesn't know how old Maggie is, so I think this tracks.
Yeah, and the mind is getting a little fuzzy from the laudanum.
Push the roll.
Not yet. I gotta make it a little ways. But I am going to go ahead and walk in what I believe to be the direction of that laughter. Assuming, of course, that why would anything be awry? This is just my daughter I'm looking for.
100%, yeah. So, you walk a bit further into the woods, and yeah, this time off from your left you hear a...
And that's not the direction I was going.
No.
Maggie, we're not playing hide-and-seek, dear. We need to go back to the house.
As you look in the direction where you heard that laughter, just for a moment, off in the distance, I mean, there's a brief gap through the trees that you can see, perhaps, you know, 20, 30 yards, maybe even a bit further. And you just see a flash of red between the trees, just for a moment, and then it's gone.
A flash of red between the trees, like sort of down at ground level?
Yeah.
Huh. Hello, is there anyone back there? Maggie, is that you?
And this time from behind you, yeah?
I'm trying to think of what I should do other than freak out, but also still try to find my daughter.
Well, seeing as you suggested that you might be freaking out here, I think this calls for an insight roll then.
Let's do. So I just roll my insight die alone?
Yeah, and if it's higher than 1?
It's a 2.
And then it goes up by 1, so your insight is now 2.
That seems not great. I'm insightful, you know, I'm the first one in.
Yeah, and with that, I mean, you start to get the impression that, yeah, something is terribly wrong here. This time, you're certain that wasn't Maggie's laugh. And yeah, as you're looking around calling her name, just for a moment, you see something else The sky above seems to be darkening through the pine needles and through the branches, and just up there in the darkness between the branches, for a moment you see lights, white lights just moving around like will-o'-the-wisps or something between the trees.
Zeke continues to call for Maggie, but he is now clearly and decidedly not running, but not walking back towards the house. And just saying, Maggie, it's time to come in now, girl. We need to get back to the house. But picking up speed towards the house.
Yeah, now, in which direction was the house again?
I'm not sure I recall. East? Was it east?
I think this is a good opportunity for a D6 roll, just to see whether you can find it.
That's a 3.
You think, yeah, I mean, you can see some of your footsteps there in the pine needles. I mean, you must be heading back the right way. You head back, but there was this very distinctive tree that you saw up in the distance as you were looking towards where you thought Maggie was, where you saw that flash of red. This very distinctive sort of bifurcated tree that, you know, looks like it had just grown wrong. You know, some part of it had grown off at an angle. And now that you're following your footsteps and walking back towards the house, you can see that tree in front of you.
Okay, so I am now thinking I'm going the wrong direction because it should be behind me.
But if you're going in the wrong direction, how can you be following your own footsteps?
I would like to try again to figure out where the house is, but possibly add in my insight die.
That sounds like an excellent idea.
Okay, so I rolled a 6, and then my insight die is a 4.
So that's good. Then you do follow these footsteps back. And yeah, then you think you can see the edge of the forest up ahead. And yeah, more importantly than that, there just to your left, leaning up against one of the trees, just towards the edge of the forest, you can see there's Maggie. She's there in her dress, so she's leaning up against the tree. But there's something wrong. I mean, it's difficult to see. I mean, it's become really dark in here. The sky overhead just seems to be pitch black now. You can't see any light at all through the treetops. Even as you're looking out through the edge of the woods now, that looks dark out there as well. But through the little bit of light that's still seeping through, you can see that Maggie, as she's leaning up against the tree, there's something wrong. There's blood all over the front of her dress. Or something dark, at least.
Maggie? And I start to move towards her when I see that there's something on the front of her dress.
Yeah, and as you call to her, she, Daddy? And she steps towards you and then just falls face forward heavily on the ground.
Maggie! And I run and drop to my knees next to her.
Okay. Well, let's cut back to everyone else for the moment.
Let's just put a pin in that.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying a nice cake.
So, yeah, I mean, a bit of time has passed. I mean, Zeke went into the woods a while back and there hasn't been any sign of him, and you haven't seen Maggie either.
How much time has passed since I saw Maggie go in and since I saw Zeke go in?
It depends how long you want to wait. I mean, half an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours.
6 to 8 weeks.
Probably about, we'll give it an hour and a half.
Okay.
I'm pretty busy right now getting everything in and getting everything set up. I mean, I don't even notice anything really. I mean, I looked out the window, I saw both of them leave, and I was like, all right, well, I'll go. I mean, they're doing whatever. I'm going to go get stuff ready. Nobody else does anything around here. I guess I'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, once the men who brought you here have unloaded all your stuff, I mean, they've left most of it just sitting outside the house. I mean, they've pushed off on their carts. Yeah, you know, the rest of you are obviously painfully aware as well that not only has Maggie disappeared now, but Zeke has gone into the woods and he's not come back.
Mary, you seen Zeke around here? I'm done doing all this by myself, and y'all got some stuff I don't want to take up for you.
No, I haven't seen him. I thought you knew where he was.
Nah, last I saw them, they went to the forest, like, say, hour ago, hour and a half? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you tell time around here. I don't even know where we are.
It's different in Scotland. Time works different.
I don't know.
What's all the racket out here?
Your son-in-law is playing around in the woods with his daughter, and I'm doing all the work. Mary, where's your husband?
Maddie, where's Maggie?
She's with Zeke, or I think she's with Zeke. He went after her by the woods when we were helping the old man.
Are there any carbide lanterns in here?
Yeah, sure.
Was that a throwback to your campaign?
Of course. And it's getting dark? We see that like Zeke did?
No. At this stage, it's probably about lunchtime.
No, just me.
So Zeke's gonna die.
Switch that from a cake to a sandwich. All right, I'll stick around the house, make sure if anybody comes around, I'll be here. Guess I'll keep pulling this shit up. And y'all go find your deadbeat husband.
Okay, I'll grab a lantern.
But, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, if Bill grew up in this area, then, I mean, he's almost certainly been around some of these old pine woods like this before. Taking a lantern around isn't a terrible idea.
Maddie, let's you and I go see if we can find Zeke and Maggie. Zeke doesn't know his way around the woods. And if it seems reasonable, Scott, I'd like for Bill to take his satchel with medical supplies out there, just in case Zeke and Maggie got in trouble since they've been gone a while.
That seems like a very good idea.
And the sweets.
Yeah, and the sweets, in case we need to lure them out.
That you stole from that old man.
The remnants of the sweets are on Bill's fingertips.
Well, I mean, the sweets, yeah, they weren't butterscotches or anything like that. I mean, as you opened them up, you realized that the sweets in there are tablet, which, as you spent your childhood in Scotland, you'll know what it is.
Tablet?
A tablet is kind of to fudge what crack is to cocaine.
What a great description.
That's a wonderful analogy.
Man, etch that on my gravestone. That's beautiful.
We might be able to do that in the next scene. So Bill and Mary will... Hey, William and Mary. We'll head into the woods with a lantern, which... Mary, will you carry the lantern so I can carry my doctor's kit?
Sure, I'll carry the lantern.
And with that, the two of them head into the woods. Now, yeah, Ollie is there in the house on his own. He's finished his sandwich. He's kind of moving boxes around, unpacking.
First one to die.
Yeah, just moving more stuff up, and time is passing, and yeah, there's a lot to be done. And by the time you get through that...
Are there any locked doors around here?
No. Or at least none that don't have keys in, so, no.
Wonderful, I'm just exploring this house. I got this all to myself right now. I got rid of the old man. This is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, there's some furniture in there. I mean, there's, metal-framed beds up in the bedroom, so... the mattresses... What mattresses there are left look like they've been home to generations of mice. they are not in a happy condition. But, yeah, the furniture, there's some wooden furniture that's been left there that's in fairly good condition as well. And by the time you unpack your stuff that you brought with you, it's beginning to feel quite homey, or at least as homey as this sort of grey, dank, slightly malodorous building can be at the moment.
How long do you think it takes me to unload all this stuff?
A few hours.
All right. A few hours? So they've been out in the forest for a few hours at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I start to get a little bored.
Bored, not concerned.
I love that that's your reaction.
No, I'm going to start to take a stroll around the grounds and be like, all right, they know what they're doing. I'm going to go take a stroll around and just check out what's going on around here.
Look for a deck of cards.
Yeah, I'm going to play some salt here.
The rest of the grounds seem quite nice. There's not huge amounts of land here. If you go up to the boundary fences, I mean, you've got certainly a few acres here. And you know, if you were looking to get started in farming, then, you know, you could certainly graze some sheep here. Not a huge herd, but, yeah, it'd be fairly pleasant. And, yeah, there's the remains of an old chicken coop out there, and there's a few outbuildings. Yeah, there's a few overgrown patches, you know, perhaps vegetable patches or flower patches that you could convert. So, I mean, you're not going to turn this into a big industrial farm or anything like that, but, you know, if you're looking to start small, there's plenty that can be done here.
Yeah, this will be just enough. This will be just enough. It is about dinner time.
It is.
I'm going to go take a look, poke around the woods for a second. Like, where the hell are these guys? I'm hungry.
Yeah, you look around the edge of the woods and there's no sign of them.
Is there anything in the woods?
Trees.
I'm going to run back. Is it getting dark out?
No, this time of year it won't be getting dark. You know, you will have spent the previous night in Glasgow. Yeah, I mean, you know, it probably won't be getting dark until 8 or 9 p.m.
And it's about like 6, 5, 6?
Yeah, probably around then.
I'll be back in before dark. All right, I'm going in.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that was a quick game.
It took less than an hour to kill all of us. Well done, Scott.
So, for a start, Bill and Mary, so you're wandering in with your lantern.
Maggie! Maggie!
Zeke!
Yell for Maggie! Maggie!
Maggie!
And again, somewhere off in the distance, you hear...
That sounds like Zeke.
That is Maggie. She's fine. Let's go fetch her, Mary.
Okay. Then, yeah, you follow that laughter for a moment. Give me whichever one of you wants. Actually, you can help each other, or you can both roll on this if you want, to try to navigate. You can give me a d6 roll each and let me know who gets the higher result.
Okay, let's do the cooperate, yeah.
Okay.
Enjoy while it lasts.
A 4 for me.
A 6 for me.
Oh, 6. Fantastic. So, yeah.
You want to sound less excited about our demise? Or...
Fantastic, he said, stroking his beard.
So, Bill sort of half wanders off in one direction, and then... Yeah, Mary notices, again, movement, this flash of red between the trees, off in another direction. And, you know, at this stage, I mean, you turn around, you know, Mary kind of looks in the direction, perhaps takes a step forward towards where this flash of red was. And, yeah, you catch sight. There's a little girl there. She's wearing some kind of red coat. She's got dark hair, long dark hair, that's just flying loose behind her. And she's just running between the trees, and you can hear that's where the laughter's come from. And just dancing behind her as she runs through the trees, you can see these floating lights.
I want to go in there after the lights to see if I can find Maggie.
And so you're going after the girl, are you?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, you follow the girl. I mean, you chase after her, and yeah, but by the time you go for a little bit, you realize all of a sudden that Bill's just not with you. But you follow her, and yeah, this girl is running through the woods. You're just about keeping pace with her. Overhead, the sky seems to be darkening.
Excuse me. Excuse me, have you seen another little girl? Her name is Maggie. Hello?
She looks back at you for a moment. She's probably only about 10 yards, maybe 20 yards ahead of you. She looks back, and there in the dimming light, I mean, you can see her face is pale. I mean, almost deathly pale. There seems to be a sheen of sweat across it. And she looks back at you, and you hear this... coming back towards you, but her face is just absolutely immobile while she's doing it. There's no smile, nothing. And then she just turns and runs again. I think that's probably worth an inside roll.
I rolled a 4.
Okay, so your insight goes up by 1. It's now 2. And Bill looks around at this stage and realizes that there is no sign of Mary anymore. You heard for a moment the brief sound of running and that laughter off in the distance, and then all of a sudden you looked away for a moment, looked back, and Mary was gone.
Mary! Mary! What's going on around here?
And your voice just vanishes into the deadened sound of the woods.
I thought you were going to say, is a perfect Scottish accent. So can I look to see if I can find Mary's footsteps, since we were close together at one point?
Oh, yeah. Give me a d6 roll.
That's a 6.
Oh,
wonderful. Fantastic. I'll be Scott for a second.
It feels good to roll it, but after hearing what happens to everyone else, I'm not sure.
So, yeah, you do follow. In fact, what that means is you catch up with her just as she catches sight of that girl in the woods, and you're standing behind her, just about to say something to Mary, and then you see this girl and this emotionless, immobile face and the laughter coming out of the unmoving mouth, up ahead of you. So, I guess you get to make that inside roll as well.
Wonderful. 3.
Okay. Then your insight goes up by 1 as well. Your insight is now 2.
Okay.
Now, Ollie was heading into the woods.
Ollie's the only one not going crazy yet.
Yet.
And yeah, you go into the woods as well. And almost immediately as you go into the woods, there, leaning up against the tree, you can just about make it out. I mean, it's very, very dark in here all of a sudden. And you see, what looks like the shape of a girl stepping forward and collapsing on the ground. And then you see what looks like a man, probably Zeke, running towards her and picking her up.
Yeah, I'll walk up. Are you all right?
And while you're kind of calling out to each other and talking there, Bill and Mary, you can hear voices from not too far away. I mean, it's a bit muffled, but it does sound like Zeke and Ollie.
Mary, if you can hear me, they're right over there. Let's go.
Yeah, mercifully, because you did bring the lantern, you can find your way there fairly quickly and safely. And if you're moving through in the pitch darkness, it would be a different story.
What did you do, Zeke?
I found her, and she's hurt, and Zeke is...
Bullshit, you found her.
Zeke is pouring some of this concoction on her wound because he believes his own bullshit. He's like, this will fix it.
Yeah, well, certainly as you've been sort of holding her, I mean, it's very obvious that, from the smell and from the sensation that this is blood, and there's enough of it now that it's soaking into your clothing. You've got it on your hands now.
I'm actually sort of ignoring Ollie, and I'm yelling out for Bill, because I know that he's a doctor. And I am yelling out his name a little frantically.
I mean, you've seen lights moving around through the trees overhead, but now there's a light moving towards you, bobbing at ground level, moving towards you fast.
And while this is happening, I'm looking back the way I came, just to know where we can get the heck out of here. Because we need to get this girl to a hospital.
You think you know where the edge of the woods was, but, as you're looking back and it's dark, you're not entirely sure.
Yeah, these woods will do that.
But as Bill and Mary arrive, as you get closer, you can see now that there's light, that Maggie is lying there on the ground. Well, not on the ground, she's now in Zeke's arms, and her dress is soaked through with blood. She's pale, she's sweaty. She seems to be unconscious or semi-conscious, and there is a lot of blood. This is a good opportunity for everyone to make an inside roll.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's a 5 for me.
That's a 4.
Yikes, I got a 4 as well.
I got a 3.
Okay, so it sounds like everyone's insight has gone up by 1.
Seems like.
Yay!
And Bill sees Maggie and yells out, "Mother Mary!" Just to get that joke in.
No, he doesn't.
I'm leaving.
Well, it's been fun, Scott.
That was fun. Cool game.
So with that, Bill kneels down. Zeke, what happened?
I found her out here and she's hurt. Help her.
So Bill, can he do a kind of a cursory examination before he digs into that doctor's kit?
Yeah, I mean, you can unbutton the front of her dress and examine her abdomen, and it's a bit difficult to see without cleaning the wound, but there is blood certainly smeared all over her abdomen, soaking into her dress, but you're having a bit of trouble working out where it's coming from. Yeah, until you clean this up, it's not necessarily going to be that easy.
Oh no, Maggie. Help her, Dad.
And can Bill tell if this situation is urgently life-threatening or whether there's time to go back to the house for a more sterile environment?
You know what they were big into in the 1800s was sterile environments.
By sterile, I mean there's water available and she's not lying on the dirt in the dark.
I know enough medical history to call that bullshit.
Hey, they were starting to learn about germ spreading in the 1890s.
Yeah, let's social distance her quickly.
All right, so is that two dice?
It definitely is.
Okay, I rolled a 4 on my regular die and a 5 for occupation.
Okay, so yeah, then that gives you... you know, everything you could possibly want to know about this situation without telling you too much, so that's good. Then you can see that there are a number of quite small puncture wounds on her stomach. They look like they've been made by needles. You're not quite sure how deep they go, but you don't think they're life-threatening. You think, yeah, I mean, she's bleeding, but you don't think that there's any internal bleeding. There doesn't seem to be any swelling or anything like that, so she may just need to be cleaned up and bandaged up.
Can Bill tell who's strongest among Zeke, Ole, and Mary? Because to that person, I'd like him to say, pick her up, carry her to the house, hurry.
Oh, she's my daughter. I pick her up immediately. I don't hesitate.
I'm rolling for it. Well, and actually, no, he'll pick her up, but I'm going to make him roll see if he fails.
You want me to fail at picking my daughter up?
Yeah, what is wrong with you? You're stronger than me.
I'm not saying I'm stronger. I'm saying I'm her father. I pick her up and take her. I don't look to see if somebody else wants to carry her.
Zeke has more adrenaline. Then I'll yell directly at Zeke. Now, Zeke, you need to carry her home.
Okay, and I pick her up, and I start following Bill.
Wait, Mary has the lantern.
Yeah, follow me, Zeke.
Well, if Mary's got the lantern and she's, you know, effectively guiding you, then, yeah, I mean, you take a few steps. I mean, you move, you know, 3 or 4 yards even, and suddenly there you can see the edge of the woods, and you can see the grass of the grounds. The house, just there, you know, a few yards away.
Good navigating, Mary.
Well, you can see it picked out in the lantern. What occurs to you is that it is pitch dark out there.
Out there by the house?
Yeah.
Zeke says, where is the house? How long have we been in there?
Well, y'all been gone for... what? 6 hours, maybe? Does it even feel like it has been 6 hours for them?
No, I mean, for Bill and Mary, it feels like it's been about 15 minutes. Zeke, you know, maybe half an hour.
He has not stopped walking, by the way. He's still heading towards the house with her.
I just want to say this is very American to make it 3 yards into the woods in 6 hours.
Well, this is so our podcast. That's about our travel rate. It's about 6 feet per episode.
But yeah, you get Maggie back to the house And once you light a few lanterns there and, you know, pump some water, then, yeah, you can get her cleaned up.
Oh, wait, so we're in the house now?
Well, you said you were heading there, so I assumed unless anyone is going anywhere else.
No, I want to run back and... No, I'm kidding.
He wants to go collect the other children. So.
But yeah, you clean up the wounds on her stomach. I mean, yeah, at least you clean the blood away. And yeah, you can see that there are a number of these puncture wounds that seem to be arranged almost in a circle.
What in God's name? Can Bill tell if these punctures were created by needles or teeth or something else natural?
Yeah, well, give me a 2d6 roll. Actually, the other thing is, yeah, sorry, before you do that, I think, yeah, now that you're back in the house, and I mean, you've passed by, you know, there was a grandfather clock that was left behind that you managed to get working earlier. If the clock is right...
Which Ol is still not 100% sure how time works here.
Yeah, the clock is showing...
It goes backwards.
The clock's showing 3 o'clock.
But it is pitch dark outside.
It is pitch dark.
Wait, 3 at night, or...
AM or PM?
It's dark, and the clock says 3. It's your choice.
It's not a digital grandfather clock?
It's not an atomic clock, it's just...
Y'all, I think it's... I mean, I don't know how stuff works out here. I think it's 3 in the morning.
What's going on here?
This doesn't make any sense. We've been gone 20 minutes.
I think that is a cue for everyone to make another insight roll.
Thank you, Zeke.
You're welcome. Hey, this is how I do.
I got a 1.
I rolled a 5.
Hey, I got a 1. I'm good.
Okay. Oh my gosh, I got a 5 as well.
Okay. Dr. McDonald was examining Maggie. So, yeah, give me that professional roll, 2d6.
So at least my occupation rolls are strong. I have a 1 on my regular die, but a 4 on occupation.
Okay, that's good. Then, yeah, you are fairly certain that these were caused by needles. If you didn't know better, you'd think that they were caused by hypodermic needles, maybe.
Hmm. And is Maggie conscious?
I mean, as you're cleaning her up and examining her, she is, yeah, coming around. She seems a little groggy at first. Her eyes flicker a bit and she looks up at you and gives you a big grin.
Hey, honey, it's gonna be all right.
Who done this thing to you?
Who did what?
All this blood.
My tummy hurts.
Sweetie, who hurt you?
I don't know. It's... my tummy hurts.
Maggie, look at me. What happened after you went into the woods?
I went into the woods and I met Maven there and we played and we ran around and we played games.
Who's Maven?
And she introduced me to her friends and I met all the fairies out there and we played with the fairies and I love the fairies and then Mom, my stomach hurts.
Maven, is she a marketer?
Maggie, was Maven wearing a red coat?
Maeve, yes, Maeve was wearing a red coat. Yes, yes. Oh, can I get a red coat like that, Mom?
For Christmas. But Maggie, I need you to focus and try to remember.
Bill, she's delirious. What's happened to her?
Can Bill check Maggie aside from the wounds to see if she's normal? I mean, temperature and pulse and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll count that as part of the previous roll you made, so no additional roll required. Yeah, apart from these wounds, and you're fairly certain, like I say, there's no internal bleeding, no serious damage. They look actually fairly superficial. You're certain that apart from that, then, I mean, she is perhaps, you know, a little bit cold from having been out in the woods for so long. Perhaps a little bit tired and hungry. But apart from that, she seems fine.
Ol's gonna go ahead and, while it's happening, look out the window and look at the woods and be like, the fuck.
Thank you for listening to Fairyland Part 1 of 3 with Scott Dorward. Check out the Good Friends of Jackson Elias podcast. Thank you to Alex, Chuck, and Will for being on the show. Order t-shirts at slade.me/merch. Join us on Patreon at slade.me/Patreon. Part 2 of Fairyland will be available on July 7th, and our regular monthly episode in the Old West will be released on July 14th. Lots of content on the way this summer. I am Cuppy Cup. Thank you, and good luck out there.